what has really gone wrong in our Bible school programs is we have assumed you primarily learn by listening rather than by practice. And, you know, you can't learn to do martial arts by listening to a book or listening to a lecture. And you can't learn about being a follower of Jesus by reading a book. At some point, you have to go out and practice and find out whether any of it is true or not.
We want our classes to be relational. We want them to be spiritually directed. My guest today, Randy Harris, talks about being transformational, in which our classes lead toward the kingdom itself, right here on the Avenue for Faith. For 32 years, Randy Harris taught Bible, theology, and ethics, first at Lipscomb University, and then for the past 21 years at Abilene Christian in Abilene, Texas. Randy is a master teacher, and he wants to spend some time talking about how to get our classes to focus on being transformational, not just sharing information, but actually moving from information to practice.
A few years ago, I read Mark Scandrett's book, Practicing the Way of Jesus. He used the term the Jesus Dojo, which was really interesting. And the whole book is about learning by practice. And what has really gone wrong in our Bible school programs is we have assumed you primarily learn by listening rather than by practice. And, you know, you can't learn to do martial arts by listening to a book or listening to a lecture. And you can't learn about being a follower of Jesus by reading a book, even the Bible. At some point, you have to go out and practice and find out whether any of it is true or not. And he uses the word experiment, which I really like, because experiment says, you don't know exactly what this is going to, how this is going to look, what's going to turn out to be. And his notion was that you gather groups of people together who make commitments for short terms to practice. As I was reading that book, I had formed a covenant group of guys at ACU, and you have to commit to a rule of life to be a member of this group. You have to sign a sheet of paper that says, "I will do my best to live under this rule." And I mean, you can leave anytime you want to, but we're trying to get people out of the habit of just slipping into things and slipping out of things, which is the American way. You know, step in, step out. Okay. And again, you think about our Bible classes, a very low commitment, you know, slip in, slip out. No covenant is often formed. Although I have been in Bible classes where covenant was formed. A little different form, but you know, where there is kind of commit to one another. And so one of the things we do in that group is we try to live out the Sermon on the Mount, you know, very easy stuff. And so every 2 weeks, we come up with some particular ways that we can live out a particular section of the Sermon on the Mount that week. And then we all make the commitment to go out and do it. And then we come back and we talk about how that went. And then we go out and we try it for another week. And then we come back and we give a new challenge on another place in the Sermon on the Mount. And I have become utterly convinced that that's the way spiritual formation happens. And the missing ingredient in our Bible school approach has been the practice part. There's this general encouragement to, okay, go out and live like this. But there is no, okay, specifically, let's think about if we're going to take this passage seriously, what are we going to have to do or say this week? And then let's come back together and let's discuss how that went. So it becomes teach, practice, reflect, practice. You get into this cycle, and I remind people in the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus' emphasis is not understanding it; it's doing it. The wise person is the one who hears these sayings of mine and puts them into practice, not the one who understands it. There are two or three difficult interpretive things in the Sermon on the Mount, but not very many. It's not that hard to understand. It's just you don't know if any of it's true until you attempt to practice it. So I've always wondered, okay, what would happen if our Bible classes became communities of practice, where we're going to go out, we're going to try to do it, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about how it went.
Randy, I can see how this makes sense in a class on the Gospels or the life of Christ, but how would you apply that same way of thinking, put this class into practice this week, in sections of Scripture that seem, less adaptable to that?
Well, I think it is more at home in the Gospels. I mean, there's a reason why the Ignatian exercises are built entirely around the Gospels. And maybe I show my biases that our Bible classes probably ought to wander through the Gospels every now and again. But I think you can ask, the big question, who does this text reveal God to be? And if this is God, who God is, then how do I respond to that? And there's no doubt there are some passages that are more, kind of given to that than others. I spent the past year reading all the way through the new Robert Alter translation of the Old Testament and all the notes, beginning to end. And by the way, there are some parts of the Old Testament that I don't think I've read in 30 years. Chronicles are as dead as I thought they were. I mean, it was just dead. List after list after list after list. But he's very good, just in terms of the translation. The notes are really good. And it's not always what I thought it was. And so I think, you have to kind of develop this willingness to, okay, I'm going to listen anew. I'm going to listen again. That's the great thing about multiple translations, is sometimes you can hear the Bible in a way you hadn't heard before. And then some of these texts, kind of the best you can do with it is, okay, don't go do that. God doesn't want you to do that. So again, I'm perfectly willing to say there's some parts of Scripture that lend itself better to this. I mean, Paul, in all of his letters, makes the move from theology to ethics. If this is what is true about God and the world, then what does it mean that we should do? So, you can certainly do that from Paul as well.
Sounds to me like what you're talking about is to add a lab component to our classes.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. And the lab is, there is a sort of fundamental educational shift that's being implied here. And that is, it goes from we know in order to do to we do in order to know. That practice isn't just the outgrowth of knowledge. Practice is the way that you learn, that you find out what's true and what's not. And education has been moving that way for a good long while now, where we've come to learn. And I get tangled up in the words. We've come to learn more about active learning, and that people just kind of listening to me might not be the best way for them to, if what we're after is transformation.
Randy, I've heard you say that a transformational focus is necessarily tied to the relationship aspect as well. Would you speak to that?
I was teaching an intro to philosophy class, and I was getting ready to do some philosophy I don't really like. And And I thought, you know, there's got to be something out there that will do this in a more lively way than I would. So, you know, I do what everybody does. I get on the internet, see if I can find a good lecture on this particular person. And I found something that was sterling. And it was so interesting to me that I started looking around for other things on other people. And it turns out there's absolutely nothing I teach that there's not somebody out there who teaches better. And that if I wanted was the best sort of dispensing of information, I would never have to show up from class. All I'd have to do is say, hit this button. That's not me. That's not the teacher that's invested in your well-being. That's not the opportunity to process and think through together. And I think that's the other thing that our Bible classes have going for us is, in many cases, we have deep relationships. We have people who are invested in each other. And we're not just doing this because we think it's interesting. We're doing it because we think there's something transformative about it. And I don't know, maybe, you know, can we raise the expectations when people come into a Bible class as to what's going to happen there?
Randy, I know sometimes teachers struggle with, do I give them good content or do I make a good connection with the students? And they feel like there's an either or. Could you address that?
Yeah, well, and I get that. There's this tension that I'm sure you've lived with too, that the students I've gotten in the last several years know less Bible when they get out of ACU than I knew when I was entering my undergrad. And it's not just because I was so smart. It was because we were doing things in a little different way then. However, their relationship is not primarily with the Bible as mine was. Their relationship is with Jesus. Now, the question is always, okay, do I have to choose between those two things? I think there is a tension there where, you know, but we're not going for just any sort of connectivity. We're going for the connectivity that comes through God expressing himself in Jesus Christ. You know, it's not just love. It's the love of God in Jesus Christ. And so, you know, I'm not sure we have to choose between those things. Although, you know, I like content, and I would test over content. But, you know, I keep coming back to the point is not to master the Bible. The point is to be mastered by the one who is all in all. And I think it's possible to get lost in that. And I think the other thing is, and I don't want to scare off Bible class teachers, but, you know, are you willing to make the commitment to invest yourself in a few people who seem open to that? Over the last few years, I would use my classes primarily as a platform to get in relationships with students who wanted them. And it's not that nothing good happened in the masses, but the really good stuff happened someplace else. And that is scary because that requires more of you. That involves an investment of your life. But if I had any one thing I could change about my career, the one thing I would change is I would have invested more in fewer. And I came around to that later in my career. But yeah, I would really encourage. I do encourage church leaders and teachers to say, "Okay, who are the people who are showing a willingness to let you invest deeply in their life, and are you willing to make whatever kind of sacrifice would be required to have those kind of relationships? You're not going to have those relationships with everybody if you're in a Sunday morning Bible class of 50." But you're looking where are those possibilities there? And I would go back to Jesus, who is a great person to go back to. His primary method of spiritual formation was personal mentoring. His first congregation was the 12, and his primary way of doing it was being with them. And the teaching that he did mostly went over their head, as far as I can tell. It goes over mine. And I think when he told those parables, but they're getting it, they're getting it. And somehow along the line, we lost that notion and kind of went into a German professorial, let me tell you everything I know about this passage. I'm probably intentionally being a little harder on all that than I actually feel. I mean, you can people can be changed by listening to teaching and content, but those deep life changes usually don't happen at that level.
I hear you challenging us to think beyond the Sunday morning classroom.
Maybe we shouldn't be thinking about Bible classes as the only means of sort of formation. Maybe we need to think about groups of practice as well.
Randy, I hear you talk about the importance of covenant groups, and I imagine this is easier to do in a small group than in a Sunday morning Bible class, but tell me about the importance of covenant groups, especially as they relate to small groups that churches have these days.
Generally, the biggest obstacle that churches have to having effective small groups are the small groups they already have, which tend to go for low-hanging fruit. And they never quite reach the level of covenant. And it doesn't have to be a formal covenant, but it does have to be a sort of, okay, let's commit to do life in a certain way. And let's hold each other graciously and accountable and encourage each other in that way of life. So, you'd have sort of some formal covenants and then some informal ones. And we're not generally comfortable, for good reason, with Sunday morning Bible classes that say, if you're going to be a member of this Bible class, here are the expectations. Although that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, have a class or two like that. But I think in terms of other groups, if you want your group to be something other than meet and eat, at some point it has to be covenantal. There has to be this commitment to one another based around a certain way of life. And, I think you can decide whether you want that to be formal or informal. It's pretty easy to do something formal. I mean, the concerns about that are always that it can become legalistic. And of course it can, people being what they are, it can go bad. But it doesn't have to.
Randy, what does this look like Monday through Saturday for the week when we're not just focusing on Sunday morning? What do we want to leave our classes with on Sunday, and what do we want to focus on during the week?
Well, I think at the very least, I want everybody going out of the class saying, okay, this is what we're going to try this week. So that we actually have something to talk about when we get together the next week. And so that would be a place to start. And then I think you kind of see, okay, who's going to play? You're going to go with the willing. You're not going to worry too much about the people who want to show up, hear the content. That's great. You're going to be there to deliver the content, but you're going to find out who the army of the willing are, and then start to ask, okay, how do we encourage and support each other in that and see what emerges? What we always want to do is build the structure first, rather than letting the practice lead us into what the structure might be. And one of the gifts of the pandemic is we have learned, I'm often negative on technology, especially media, and with good reason. We have found that there are forms of connectivity that don't require our constant physical presence, and that there's a certain efficiency to that. I'm in a text group with my covenant group, and we're sort of conversing off and on all the time. And if that was all the relationship was built on, it wouldn't be enough. But being built on the relationships that it is, it actually turns out that it's a lot. I'd be sort of open to seeing kind of how, I don't think there are any shortcuts to that. I think you have to make the kind of the personal physical investment. But as you do that, then there are other ways that sort of emerge from that.
I really enjoyed sitting down with Randy Harris to talk about being transformational in our classes, teaching that actually puts the words into practice, that builds relationships for the purpose of helping people to seek the kingdom of God. Next week, we're going to spend some more time talking about being both relational and spiritually directed. I hope you'll tune in again right here on the Avenue for Faith. Thanks for joining. No one has ever loved you like Jesus Christ. I hope you feel that love in every sermon that's preached on this podcast. You can find more sermons, transcripts, study guides at nathanguy.com. Please stay tuned for another lesson and rest in the love of Christ.